I'm Ainsley Earhart.
I'm Trey Gowdy.
I'm Madison Allworth, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, November 10th, 2025. I'm Eben Brown. What will happen next in Syria? Will the Kurds have anything to say about it? Will they make peace with Israel? And what will come of a former Al-Qaeda leader visiting President Trump at the White House?
If Ahmed al-Shara is rational, he will safeguard the unity and protection of all Syrians, because otherwise Syria will descend back into another civil war, this time between Islamists and secular Syrians and minority Syrians. And that's what Israel fears very much.
This is the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. Whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network, it's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more at firstnet.com/public safety first.
In the few short months last year, Israel put the Hezbollah terror syndicate in a full retreat between airstrikes across Lebanon and the spy novel level attack by using bombs implanted in two-way pagers. The Israelis not only ended a threat by Hezbollah bunkered in Lebanon, but caused the collapse of the regime of Syria's Bashar al-Assad, a second-generation despot propped up by Iranian-backed Hezbollah. The terrorists could no longer function as Assad's muscle. But who should emerge as Syria's new ruler? A man who formerly commanded the likes of Al-Qaeda and even ISIS fighters, and who the U.S. once placed a $10 million bounty on his head and locked him away in the notorious Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. He used to be known as Mohammed al-Jolani, Jolani the Arabic for from the Golan, the mountain range now considered Israeli territory, but his real name is Ahmed al-Shara. Instead of fatigues, he now wears a suit, he smiles for the cameras and no longer scowls. And there is a growing belief that he might be the guy to keep all the different factions in Syria from killing one another or killing the vulnerable minorities like the Druze and the Kurds, who are fighting to keep themselves safe from Islamists across Syria and Iraq. Al-Shara met with President Trump today at the White House, but the Kurds are watching and hoping.
This was my fourth trip to Iraqi Kurdistan. I'm quite familiar with it. But I have been wondering how they're viewing the changing Middle East following Israel's war after October 7th, because it obviously impacts them with neighboring Iran and the changes in Syria.
We spoke Sunday with Dr. Kanta Ahmed. She's a New York-based physician who is also a senior fellow with the International Women's Forum and an expert on radical Islamism, and who serves as a bridge between East and West, culturally and politically. She's just back from a visit to the region where she says despite the wars, things are improving day by day.
While I was there, I was able to meet senior government officials and other political elites. And I asked if I could go into northeast Syria myself to understand the region held by the Syrian Democratic Forces. Those are the Syrian Kurdish forces that are U.S.-backed, U.S.-allied, and made of Christian and also secular Arabs as well as Syrian Kurds. And they're the major force that are guaranteeing the safety of minorities that are feeling very threatened under Ahmed al-Shara, who's about to visit President Trump.
I think that is something to talk about here. This is a man who was once an Al-Qaeda and ISIS kingpin. He's now the de facto ruler, if we'll call him that, of the post-Assad Syria. But people have been dealing with him as a head of state, and he's getting a big enough welcome anyway to be welcomed to the White House, to the Oval Office. Is that a sign of an understanding, I think, by the West that this guy may have a past, but this is who we have to talk to right now?
A senior American diplomat has gone on record saying the meeting is the message. And I think that this is the realpolitik that President Trump is dealing with, U.S. administration is dealing with. He has been globally recognized, including by Gulf states, by the EU. He's engaged with Russia. But you're right. In the region, his background is extremely well known. The United States had a $10 million bounty on Al-Shara. He was in prison as a member of Al-Qaeda under the United States in Iraq. So he's very well known. The major concern is Syria remain unified, but the power structure in Syria, even though it will be a central government that will manage Syria, needs to be decentralized. So minorities like the Druze in the southwest and the Kurds in the northeast have proper representation and are not at the mercy of Islamists that may be in the lower ranks.
Is there a belief that Shara can control the Islamists he once cheerlead for? I mean, you have to imagine that these Islamists who have been conducting these atrocities against the Druze and against Alawites and whatnot, that, you know, at one point in time, he was encouraging them to do this. Now he's trying to tell them, hey, you can't do this anymore. Does he have that kind of moxie to get them to stop? I think that's a question we don't have an answer to yet.
That's the central question. And certainly I'm allowed to say that in my conversations with President Nachivan Barzani, the leader of Iraqi Kurdistan, his best way of saying it is that Ahmed al-Shara is the last chance for Syria. And I think that's why you find the international community is backing him so strongly. And equally, I was able to speak to General Mazloum, commander of the Syrian Democratic Forces, who also stated is if Ahmed al-Shara is rational, he will safeguard the unity and protection of all Syrians, because otherwise Syria will descend, in my assessment, back into another civil war, this time between Islamists and secular Syrians and minority Syrians. And that's what Israel fears very much.
It's interesting to me that Israel would have a vested interest in propping up an Islamist to rule a country that has been hostile to it for the better part of a century, really. That in and of itself is kind of mind-bending, but this is the reality. And I think everyone, as from what you're saying, is that everyone is beginning to acknowledge the reality of the situation here, that yes, a less than perfect person is in charge, but everyone needs to hurry up and make some peace here because there's nothing else to do at this point.
I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. And the leaders that I spoke to very much believe international and United States support needs to be highly conditional. There is a concern about the repeal of the CSA Act, which is waiting a House vote for it to be passed, that could potentially unfetter any limits on Ahmed al-Shara and his government. I think Israel is much more pragmatic. It's lived in a neighborhood surrounded by hostile forces and recognizes what happens when they're not deterred. I think that Israel has made a very emphatic deterrent, and that is shelter the Druze people to an extent. I don't see Israel giving up the additional territory that it is holding beyond the Golan Heights, that buffer zone, though that's subject of an intense negotiation between Ahmed al-Shara's government and Israel and the United States at the moment. I think we're going to see U.S. forces in a base in Syria. That's being discussed. And I think it's in our interest as Americans for the United States to continue the partnership with the SDF. They already have a very big base in Erbil. That's the regional capital of Iraqi Kurdistan. It's a route by land. That's the drive that I took in a small private vehicle across land into northeast Syria. So that can be a good supply chain. But yes, we have to support, as President Trump said, Syria deserves a chance. All we've got is this leader with his very checkered and violent background. That support has to be conditional.
Is there, from the people you spoke with and from visiting, is there perhaps maybe a feeling of some positivity or even if it's a bit guarded? I mean, these are groups of people who for decades have been subjected to war, to violence, to uncertainty. They have had lives that have been extremely difficult, really through no fault of their own individuality. It's just this has been forced upon them for so long. It's perhaps one of the most desperate parts of the planet, I would think. But is there a feeling on the ground that things could change, that there could be an improvement here? Because, you know, it makes no sense to live forever in war. I think that's something President Trump is trying to stop.
So I think what struck me on my trip this time to Iraq, which was the fourth time, is the incredible optimism. The restaurants are full, the hotels are full, people are getting married, there are meetings, people are traveling on vacation. It was very disorienting because my last four trips to the region had been under aerial warfare in Israel. So it was a completely different Middle East. Iraqis do not want any more conflict. They're actually going to the polls this week for their general elections. What shocked me about being in northeast Syria is how welcoming the people were. I traveled on a highway that's been battled over by the Assad regime, Hezbollah, HTS, the Syrian Democratic Forces, the United States backed forces. It was an astonishingly pockmarked highway. And yet the greeting at the end was so welcoming and so warm. And I congratulated the Syrians on defeating Assad, who I think is a criminal against humanity of the highest order. And they thanked me as a representative of Americans, saying it was only possible with your help. So the Syrian Kurds and the Syrian Democratic Forces recognize the amazing impact the United States has had. And that kind of optimism and hope really touched me.
Our guest is Dr. Kanta Ahmed, senior fellow at the International Women's Forum, and we are discussing the future of Syria and the former terrorist turned statesman al-Julani, otherwise known as Ahmed al-Shara, and whether or not he can keep the minorities in Syria safe, including the Kurds. On the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition, we'll have more straight ahead.
Nearly home.
Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pro's number one most trusted app. If you're hearing me, I'm going to assume you're awake. And if you aren't, because while you're snoozing, someone else might be finding your dream home. That's where Realtor.com comes in. With over 500,000 new real listings straight from the pros every month, that's a lot of chances to find the place you've been dreaming of. Whether you're searching for a two-story mid-century with a pool or a little extra space with a spa-inspired bathroom, Realtor.com can help you find it today. So quit hitting that snooze button. Realtor.com isn't sleeping on finding your dream home, and neither should you. Download the Realtor.com app today, because you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey. Over 500,000 new listings every month based on average new for sale and rental listings, February 2024 through January 2025.
All of this happens or is happening knowing not just so much that al-Julani is going to be meeting with President Trump, but I think pretty soon the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is meeting with President Trump. There is perhaps no person more powerful right now in the Middle East, at least among the Arab states, than the Crown Prince. And I think a lot of the Gulf Arab communities, they look to him to kind of take lead here. What should we be expecting from this coming meeting? Certainly President Trump is going to be pushing for Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords. And we'll talk about Abraham Accords in just a second, because there is a new member to that agreement. But the Saudi Crown Prince coming to visit is a big deal.
Yes, I think that's happening on November 18th. Certainly, I think they'll be talking about Syria. And what I'd like to see, and was already being revealed, is the competition between Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states and Turkey for influence over the new Syria. And that competition is seen as healthy. It's what Syria needs, as opposed to, again, coming under the thrall of another hegemon as Iran once did. With the United States and Saudi Arabia, I am hoping not only for their typical forms of engagement, which I think are going to be over defense, certain military contracts, and no doubt more of the tech and AI engagement that has been talked about. I would like President Trump's administration to engage and encourage the Saudis to take a more global role. They've been quite reluctant and quite shy from that, which has allowed Qatar to have an outsized global influence. And we need that counterbalanced. Whether that's on the agenda, I would have no way of saying.
And let's talk about the Abraham Accords. Certainly having Saudi Arabia join those accords would be pie in the sky. But an interesting new partner has come into this agreement in the past week, and that is Kazakhstan. Not an Arab country, Central Asian, Turkic people, and have had diplomatic relations for quite some time with Israel and have had some business relationships, some commerce. But why would they feel that they would want to be a part of this, being that they have not had hostilities and they're also not part of the Gulf region?
I think there's growing recognition that the Abraham Accords are an incredible economic and trade security framework. I think there's a tremendous appetite to be part of that. I was expecting Azerbaijan would actually join before, and so perhaps this is a way in for that. I think the Central Asian countries are extremely important. Certainly, when you're in Pakistan, there's a lot of business that happens between Pakistan and those countries. And this is just a way where I think we're going to see more and more Muslim majority countries come in. I think Indonesia will be very quickly part of this expanding conflagration. And my belief is Saudi Arabia, it's always been, will come towards the end. Saudi Arabia's made that preconditional on realizing a Palestinian state, but also Saudi Arabia is a jewel in the crown. After Saudi Arabia, nations like Iraq could consider becoming part of the Abraham Accords, where they still have an anti-normalization law where relations with Israel can be punishable on death. It's a leftover law that's recently been resurrected. But I think this is very emblematic. And the fact that the Abraham Accords have survived this furious 2 years of war underpins and underlines its tremendous strength. Worth mentioning, we should hope that we can see an end to the conflict in Sudan, which is the worst global conflict at the moment, and that was also a signatory. So it's all positive, even though there's been tremendous conflict. A lot of these developments are major achievements.
I think a lot of people forget Sudan was a signatory to the Abraham Accords. Their civil war seemed to really break out after signing them. But from the get-go, both sides of the civil war in Sudan had, I think, at least early on, said, yeah, we're going to continue with the Abraham Accords no matter what. That does, I think, underpin, as you've mentioned, the strength of the Accords. Other peace processes have fallen apart for different parts of the planet. They've taken years or even decades to materialize into something that gets two groups beyond their conflict. I like to draw the comparison to Northern Ireland, for instance. I mean, that was something that no one ever thought would resolve, and it took a long time and often seemed to break down. The Abraham Accords have stood this test, and I think more so especially with the UAE and Bahrain more than any of them, because I think they're geographically closer to Israel and Gaza. But what made these accords so strong, do you think? It's one thing to have diplomatic relations and open an embassy, but these accords did more than that.
I think there's a tremendous hunger in the Gulf region and in the Arabian Peninsula in general, in Saudi Arabia, for trade, security, travel, technology. Saudi Arabia particularly, the majority of its population is under the age of 30. It is rapidly upwardly mobile, highly educated, has great expectations from its leadership, and is going to fulfill tremendous potential. These countries have tremendous natural resources and human resources. Iraq is the same. And so partnering with a country like Israel, which has a 21st century economy built on innovation, technology, patents, extraordinary intellectual accomplishments, just makes sense. And that region has paid the price for 80 years of hostility to this pint-sized neighbor. And I think these generations don't want to relive that. Even when traveling in Iraq, people are absolutely fatigued of the regional conflict, and they don't want conflict to come back. I think the Saudis are the same. The Emiratis are the same. I think there are many countries that would want to see that kind of stability. And from the United States standpoint, it's very clear the pivot or the fulcrum of the world's economy is going to be moving to the global south. The world's population is going to be mostly anchored in the global south. That is going to be a major center for global economic growth. And we want to be the architects of that and also the beneficiaries of that.
Dr. Kanta Ahmed, physician and senior fellow with the International Women's Forum, thank you so much for being with us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
My pleasure.